however many people.
Say hi.
She was like just needing to come up. So welcome Wednesday night. I'm going to have to get used to saying that. Wednesday night, generational change. I'm Jen.
I'm Peter. And yes, this is the new format and we're sticking to it. But we will have one last show on a Thursday, next Thursday, for a very special guest. So that is how it's going to have to go down. Guys, smash that like button, share it everywhere. We got obviously a lot to talk about. We do unfortunately have a little bit of sad news. Shania is not going to be able to join
us this
evening.
It's not sad news. Something came up, and for anybody who knows, like I know when you're a candidate, things come up.
Yes.
So he had to cancel tonight and asked if we could reschedule, so we will do that. And but we could talk to Isaiah forever.
Forever and ever. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Isaiah back, for a lot of you who may or may not know,
he's always been one of your favorite candidates 100%. Of all the BNC people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know.
But he recently, if you guys haven't seen it, he was just on a panel with Jon Stewart for his new show. I think it's called The Problem with Jon Stewart. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. That sounds right.
I mean, Isaiah just absolutely dominated, and John was just completely blown away by him.
He's just extremely honorable.
Yes.
He's very honorable. And I find that to be a very welcoming trait in somebody seeking public office.
He's not just seeking public office. He's seeking public office against a black woman from the civil rights era. And that's a very,
I was going to ask, like, what's his, and how long has she been sitting there?
Ooh, long time.
Okay.
Long time.
So it's basically like Maxine, Frederica
Maxine, okay. Same thing.
So that's definitely a tough road for sure. But
he's got a lot going for
him. Oh yeah.
And now that he's got national exposure, that's a big deal.
He's extremely likable.
So we need more people that are willing to take chances. But as we often say on the podcast, you have to have a path. And I think that that is something that a lot of people don't recognize is vitally important when you're running for office, is that you have to have a path. And I think he has a path. He's in New York City. He's between Ocasio-Cortez's district and I think Nadler's district, if I'm not mistaken. Brooklyn, he's Brooklyn. And that, if there's a place that you want to run, that is a place that you want to run. Obviously, it's going to be difficult in that district, but this is his second time running. He is a man of honor. He has served our country more than admirably. And he is a true, he is the American dream.
Yeah.
Not in the way that it should be, but he is somebody who came from very humble beginnings and has done an amazing job. And now his story is really starting.
It's the same, it's like Cori Bush. It's people that really represent their people.
And again,
where you come from and your experience really is important. You have an entire Congress full of like multimillionaires, and then people are surprised that things don't get done for regular people.
Yeah.
So the idea is to have regular people that would then do things for regular people. So Isaiah is just somebody he's like a fighter, and he's not bending the knee to anybody.
No, he's not bending the knee.
He's very likable.
He is. He's very likable. And again, for somebody who could come off because he is a big guy.
Yeah, he's big.
He's about 6'7". But he's a gentle giant, for somebody who has done what he has done. He could be a completely different person. He could be a very angry person. He could just, war affects a lot of people in a lot of different ways. But his mission is to basically say, I don't want anybody who went through what I went through to have to go through that again. And that is as admirable as anybody who could ever serve. And so we see now that as much as we are trying to pull back in terms of the war effort, on the one hand, President Biden pulls our troops out of Afghanistan, and that's a great thing. And we will talk about this, obviously, with Isaiah.
And then we drone bomb what?
Family? 10? Mm. I think we'll do news and amuse with Isaiah.
That's fine. Yeah. That story in particular.
And the other stories. But if we do not deal, this is very similar to... And look, we liked our guests, Mike Lennox and Becky Duff, who came on the show last week to talk about the need for the decarbonization imperative. But they didn't discuss and didn't write about the most significant part of the story.
No, that's not true. It's just the way that they framed their book dealt with the military industrial complex deals with all those various issues. They went to the root.
Correct.
They said that in the beginning. We didn't talk about particular industries. We talk about the systems. So they're looking at it from a ground to consumer, not in terms of what segment is purchasing.
And if they're not willing,
I get that.
If they're not willing to do what is necessary to fix this problem, this thing is just going to get infinitely worse. And we need more veterans,
yes,
veteran candidates saying, if we don't deal with this problem, this planet's done. Or at least the planet's not done. The human race is going to be done.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, planet will eventually
just
come
like
back.
The greatest, as I like to call him, the greatest comedian of them all said that, and I don't even have to say who it is. You all know who it is. He said, the earth is going to shake us off like a bad case of fleas or something like that. All right, I'm talking about George Carlin. But of course, he was right. He's like, the earth ain't going anywhere.
You know,
the earth is just going to shake us off like a cold.
Speaking of the comedians, we should talk about the Dave Chappelle thing that's going on.
I think that is a very important topic.
I have comments to make about this.
Well, again, another topic that I think we could talk about with Isaiah. This is, again, it depends on, you know, from what angle do you want to, you know, address it from?
I have sort of an opinion about all different aspects of this whole thing.
Okay. But again, is it a question of being too woke about the issue, or is it a question of Chappelle going too far, or is it a question of people going after him that are too far?
No, it's all of it. But I heard that
a person that was working at Netflix was like trying to oust him or something, or it tried to get in on a meeting that they didn't belong in.
And they got fired. Okay, so this comment is not in regards to a trans person being fired. Because that I don't know the context of that they were somewhere they weren't supposed to. I don't know the story. So this is not about that. If it was retribution, then no, that should not happen.
And of course, as I always like to say, the public is only going to know a small portion of what really goes on.
I need to comment on the Dave Chappelle anti-trans, because this is my understanding of it, is that this is, he's done multiple shows where this is a big topic for him. I personally think he's very brilliant. I've liked him for a very long time. I think it's disappointing that this is where like he's focusing his comedy. Like I don't think it's that funny. But not because it's offensive. I just don't think it's that funny. There's that. The fact that it offends people, hurts their feelings in any way, I don't care. I am a free speech. That's the thing. So while I find it pathetic that Dave Chappelle and it's apparently he's overdone this a lot at this point. Like this is like the third show he's done where this is one of his subjects. I just think move on. It's just not that funny. But I don't believe in censoring people. I just don't.
I think it's just gotten to the point where I think a lot of people are recognizing that.
No, you're right. It's not going to age well.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of things don't age well. But that's for history. Let the chips fall where they may. I just don't believe that because something hurts someone's feelings that no one else should get to hear it. I don't agree with that.
You can just turn them off. And I think that's absolutely the thing about comedy that people don't seem to understand, is that this whole idea, and this was really, this was a really hot button topic leading up to Trump becoming president, is this whole idea that we have to censor people, or that we have to, again, it's,
we can dislike it.
It's, and again, I can tell, as two people that are vaccinated, I can tell you that if you squeeze people too tight with these mandates, it's going to have the opposite effect of the intended result. I can tell you that this is just human nature. This is how people are going to react. And it's not that what Chappelle is saying is something to disagree with. No, you can disagree with it, but that's what booing and hollering and stuff. But people want to go to the length. It's no different than people who work at Spotify that were trying to cancel Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
they tried to do the same thing.
I didn't agree with canceling Alex Jones, and he's a wackadoo.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, again, he is a wackadoo. It is completely different when he's doxing families of people.
Oh,
who say,
yes.
That's,
by the way,
that's different.
Yes. I think that those things those needed to be pulled, because those are like inciting violence and doing things that that's not okay. But I just mean in general, I don't think that you get rid of someone's whole platform. You could take down the content that is inciting violence. You do not have to completely, I think that that's not the way to do it.
And I think people, you know, need to understand that it's a, you know, there's a lot of pain in the trans community. There is. And that's a burden that, you know, again, as
do you know that the leading cause of death for trans men is,
oh, suicide
is no huh? homicide.
Homicide. Really?
Yeah.
You mean they're, you mean they, the way that they die is by homicide. They,
And that apparently, and I don't know if it was Tim Black, somebody was talking about this, that apparently the life expectancy of a trans man is somewhere in the 30s.
That's bad.
It's like, does it really matter what 30 is? Like it could be 36, 37. It's in 30s. So. It's horrible. And so, no.
But this.
So I have issues with, I don't agree with him. I don't like that that's what he's finding funny. But under no circumstances do I think you should censor that. And also, as for the woman who got fired, that I would have to know all the
100%.
I don't know all the circumstances.
And regardless of what we are hearing, it's only a fraction of what actually went on.
So just remember
that the public only gets to know a little bit. But what I will say about Chappelle, and one of the reasons why I think that there is a lot of juice to this story, is because there have been a lot of comics that have been silenced over the past 5 years. And there's a lot of comics who also changed their style because of so much of this, you know, political environment that has everybody on pins and needles that can't speak the truth or doesn't even want to joke about things other than let's just dunk on Trump 24/7. At some point, that's going to die. And then you got to try to do other things. You can't even joke about President Biden.
People just can't handle being offended. But the thing is, what people don't realize, this is sort of how I feel about the evaporation of the Fourth Estate and what's been happening to our media. When you go after comics and comedy, it sort of has that same effect, because the whole point of comedy, when it's done properly,
it's supposed to be the one place where you can say and what you want.
You're supposed to be able to challenge norms. And I, you know, shout out to, I have to always, whenever we think about challenging norms, I have to think of Joan Rivers, because
talk about breaking all the barriers.
Because, you know, she was making fun of abortion when it wasn't legal.
Yeah.
So like you're that. That's the point of comedy in a lot of, I mean, that is. And so like, if you, oh,
well, guess what?
Well, so, and if, so if you take that away, I feel like you're almost, that's just further censoring the discussion we need to be having.
We're always happy to, and that is a great discussion, and we are always happy to be surprised, and we are surprised this evening. So as it turns out, Shanian is here. So without further ado,
he was taunting me by sending me an email that he couldn't come. First of all, look at how cute he is with that beard. But because right after I ever do a graphic, then that's when somebody has to cancel when I have the graphic done. That's how it works. But so now I'm pleasantly surprised.
Two wonderful gentlemen from New York who were slate mates of Jen's through Brand New Congress, and are two men who have served our country admirably. First, and will be the first time, and definitely not the last time, on Generational Change. You know him from New York. He ran in New York's 5th Congressional District. He is now
exploratory.
Okay. Knock on wood, it's going to happen. New York's 26th.
Got to be strategic. That's in seat. Who knows? You got to have the path to victory. You got to have it.
But New York is changing.
Oh, yes.
Shanian Chaudhary, welcome to Generational Change.
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
It's doing well, my friend, and welcome. And in the other corner...
This is not some... Everybody's friends here. But okay, but it's... If it was like a Jersey candidate, that would be fun. But they're both New York candidates. So
well, I'm the Jersey guy here, so you could just make fun of me. I'm used to it anyway.
I don't see any rivalry here, but okay, go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Isaiah's from Brooklyn, so we got some Brooklyn Queens beef going on.
Well,
and you're different military branches. I know that.
That too, yes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. There you go.
We'll have to keep some competition
going.
As they say, there's military and then there's the Marines.
Well, there's always the Marines.
You know him, you love him. He's been on the show before. He is running once again to represent New York's 9th Congressional District. He is also somebody who served our country admirably and did a phenomenal spot recently on Jon Stewart's new show, which we are looking forward to talking about.
I'm going to have to go watch.
Yes. You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Wow.
I've been packing.
Isaiah James, welcome back to Generational Change.
Hi there, y'all in TV land.
Hi. Well,
listen, I didn't get dressed up just for this. I had an interview meeting. I was actually giving a speech to a branch of DSA in another part of the country, so had to be a little formal. And then the meeting was 30 minutes later. I'm like, I'm too tired to change, so I'm just going to stay where I am.
No, you clean up nicely.
So I want you to know it's not all formal. Maybe a party formal up north, but It's a party down south. I'm wearing Crocs.
Oh, there it is.
And that definitely has
you just see the tie and the shirt. I promise you, I'm in sweatpants and Crocs right here sitting on my kitchen table. So
okay, now we know Sean Yet's not because he's in his car. So if he's
that mean nothing, like, you can be in sweatpants and Crocs in the car.
Okay, that's I suppose so.
For sure.
I'm wearing pajama pants.
See, I'm wearing pajamas, so I thought out of Florida. So you don't know about Bowler Market. Sean, you know about Bowler Market.
Of course.
I go to bowl. There's a bowler down the street from my house. I run the bowler and
cross. There's no
the
shame.
No shame. I don't give a damn. All the time.
So talk to us about what it's been like being on the trail. Obviously, it's the grind season is about to begin. Usually once you get to that 1 year, well, not even. I mean, the New York primary is in June. So obviously there's a lot going on. Yeah. I believe it's June. Yeah, it's June. So talk to us about how things are going so far. Whoever wants to, you know, take it first.
Well, I want Shania to talk about what are you exploratorying? I'm making it a word. What are you like? What tell us that because we know for sure what Isaiah is running for. So tell us what's going on with you.
Yeah, you know, so oddly enough, after last year, I kind of had to take a step back and just really reevaluate my life and its personal life and everything else going forward with the movement work. And what we found was, all right, where can we be successful in the next cycle or the cycle afterwards? And where can we improve? And what we found was that within Congressional District 5, where I ran in, you know, we received about 25% of the vote. No other candidate in the district's history got that close against the incumbent. But digging in deeper, we won in two assembly districts within the congressional race. It was Assembly District 38 and Assembly District 24. These are working class immigrant communities. And I also had to look at the current incumbents within the assembly districts as to who's there right now. And going back and forth for months trying to decide who I'm going to challenge next, I've decided I'm going to make my announcement next week. So I am phasing out the exploratory committee. But I will let you know that I'm definitely going to be running in Assembly District 24. So that is in that includes neighborhoods of Jamaica, Queens Village, Hollis, you know, Run DMCs from Hollis. And, you know, so this community has changed a lot over the years. Demographics have changed to more class immigrant community, and the current representation does not reflect that at the moment. And the most interesting thing about this is that within this assembly district, not only did I defeat the congress member, but also defeated the assembly member in that seat. And the assembly member who was Dave Weber, he ran for city comptroller twice, most recently last year, and he lost. So he's in a very vulnerable position right now for a challenger. And I think that our campaign is obviously have learned a lot. We have momentum. We got the energy. So I think that coming out the gate, we're going to be in a good position to win this next June.
Yeah, definitely. You have to pick up the strategy and realize that it's not about where you want to be. It's sort of about where you can be of most service and where you have the best opportunity to be. Like it's strategy, right? I mean, it's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the lessons. There's many lessons to be learned, you know, just from the experience of running for Congress and, you know, building that foundation that's so important. I'm curious from, you know, because obviously you're both gentlemen who have served our country and what that experience has been like and how that translates into politics. You know, I think being somebody who has served and has experienced what you've experienced, I think it gives a whole new perspective in terms of how to identify the day-to-day problems that really matter versus a lot of the mundane stuff that we get so caught up in this country that really has no effect on day-to-day lives. It doesn't change anything for the better. So if you could talk about what that experience has been like and how, you know, being, and I'm sure Shania will be back, but Isaiah, obviously this is first directed at you. You know, what that experience has been like, you know, recognizing that we've got a lot more serious things to worry about than, you know, who's getting into beef here or there. There's a real, you know, everyday problems that we face that we have to deal with.
It's sometimes hard to get people to understand that, you know, we live in America, and I tell people all the time, you know, we still deserve an egalitarian society. We still deserve an equitable society, but we have to put things in perspective. We have first world problems. You know, most of the world lives on less than $500 a year. Let me say that again. Most people in the world, because you have to think, China has 2 billion, India has over a billion. So most of the people in the world live on less than $500 a year. So our problems have to be put into context. Now, talking about the context of America, it sucks that rich people have all the power and the money. So yes, we damn well need to change it. Serving in the military has given me a lot of perspective. Like, for one, I got to see America's foreign policy from the other side. You know, we hear that we're sending troops here, sending troops there, but you don't really get to see it because it's just a headline and it goes out of your thought, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But every time I pulled a trigger, I was America's foreign policy. Every time I kicked the door, I was America's foreign policy because I had an American flag on my shoulder while I was doing it. If I didn't have that American flag on my shoulder, I would have been labeled a sociopath or a criminal. But because I had America's flag on my shoulder, I was somehow right with the world, but it wasn't. So I got to see the sausage being, you know, made, for, you know, mixing metaphors, and it's terrible. It opened my eyes to the suffering of people around the world that you don't normally get to see, because it doesn't even make a blip on the headline. We're only seeing the stuff about Haitian migrants coming over the border because it's sensationalizing. Haiti has been the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere for the last 30 years, and nobody said a damn thing. Do you realize that the world, I forget, it was the World Health Organization says it would cost about $25 billion to end childhood hunger in the world. $25 billion. Do you realize that the F-22 program, Raptor program, is worth $250 billion? We could have ended childhood poverty in the world 10 times over just getting rid of one set of jets. Not to mention the F-22s or the F-23s, the F-16s, the F-15s, the F-18s, all the other damn F-jets we have. We just have to have the Raptors. So we could have ended childhood poverty 10 times over. Do you realize that, you know, pharmaceutical companies are making $70, $80 billion a year? It sounds like a lot. That's one contract to General Dynamics, and they get three or four of them a year. That's one contract to Boeing or BAE Systems or any Dynacor, any of the Triple Canopy, any of the other damn, you know, alphabet agency, you know, quasi-military things out there to get these contracts. So, you know, the military-industrial complex is the unforeseen hand that moves the market and moves the country, because 55% of discretionary spending in this country, in one way or another, is spent on the military budget, the DOD, and things like that, Department of Defense. So we have, in a sense, traded, you know, freedom for security, in quotations, after 9/11, and we were warned about the rise of this thing 60, 70 years ago, because two people who couldn't have been more diametrically opposed in their views, in their thinking, in their upbringing, warned us about the military-industrial complex. And that was Martin Luther King Jr., who was a black socialist preacher from the South, and General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was the Supreme Allied Commander, who then became the President of the United States. His outgoing address warned us about the rise of the military-industrial complex. And Martin Luther King Jr., in his later years before he was assassinated, warned us about the rise of the military-industrial complex. If those two people agree on a topic, then we know that we have to change it.
Yeah. No, what were you
going to
say about
it? I was going to say, Sean, you know, obviously being a Marine, you know, frontline, that experience and what that's meant, and obviously recognizing, you know, how much, you know, the MIC controls our day-to-day lives and how that is so much more of a central focus. And one of the things also, being candidates who are veterans, it gives you, with all due respect to other people running for office who are saying we have to cut military spending, it's a whole other level of credibility when people who have actually served our country and have actually been on the front lines of warfare can actually say, this is BS. We are spending way too much money here. The soldiers are not benefiting from it anywhere near like you think they are. This is really military defense contractors like General Dynamics, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and so on. you know, that, and when Shani comes back, he'll obviously address that. But I think that that, Isaiah, as you said, it really speaks to, you know, the heart of what this problem is. And as we always like to say on the podcast, the consequential issue of our time is corporate special interest money in politics. Nobody spends more money than the military industrial complex on whomever they need to spend that money on. You know, it could be, you know, your representative. It certainly is our representative here in South Florida. It's all over the United States. But it, to me, that is the issue of our time, is the corporate special interest money. And Shani, if you manage to hang, if it doesn't cut you out for a few minutes, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You know, obviously the impact that the MIC does have, but also the credibility that someone like yourself has to speak on this issue because you have served.
Yeah, I mean, you know, taking what I know now, I'm not going to beat the horse on what Isaiah has said, because I think he just hit the nail on the head of all this. You know, taking what I know, I've actually continued to organize around these issues. So right now, one of the things I'm working on is working with local groups like DSA, Anti-War Working Group, where we're trying to actually push the city council, where they're trying to pass a resolution to call on the federal government to make sure that we do cut the budget, the federal spending on military warfare, so we could spend it on public goods like, you know, education, housing, mass transit. So, you know, a lot of that experience is important, and I think that what's so great is that when you have folks like myself or Isaiah or any other veteran who's ran in the past, and they come into spaces and really bridge the two worlds together, you know, we're going to see something even more successful going forward. So, you know, I haven't stopped organizing. I know Isaiah hasn't stopped organizing around this. So, yeah, you know.
Well, that was
perfect.
He's just, perfect. You know what? I think he was just being very ambitious for trying to be here while he's in his car, like sitting where we're doing whatever he's
that
doing.
That was a great sound. Well,
you guys don't know Sean like I do. He's always in his damn car on the phone. Every time I talk to him, I'm like, where you at, bro? Oh, I'm driving. I was like, I have a car. My car had to get an inspection. It's been sitting out on the street for a year. I don't drive. Sean is always driving that damn thing. But the thing about me and Sean being veterans, so we disrupt the narrative, because the narrative of veterans is the square-jawed white kid from middle America. And as you can see, Shaniat is a Muslim man and I'm a black man. And both of us are veterans. And we don't look like anything of the typical veteran. So this is speaking to your argument of lending credibility to our argument, because not only am I a veteran, not only am I the son of immigrants, not only am I somebody who has disabilities, not only am I a combat veteran, I'm also a black man in America. So all of these things are intertwined and interjected. And I can speak to all of these things, because when somebody like AOC or Jamal or whoever speaks to these things, it's very easy to push back against them, because all we can say, all they have to say is, well, you don't know what the troops are going through. You know, you don't understand what it's really like on the front lines and blah, 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 X, Y, Z. But with me, it's a little bit different, because yeah, if I didn't get blown up, I would still be in the military, because I would not have hit my 20 years yet. Right now, I would be at 17 years right now. No, I joined in 05. I'd be at 16 years right now. So I would, you can't tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. And I've been challenged many times, because I don't always lead with the veteran thing up front. I've been challenged many times about if I'm faking, if I'm lying, if I'm making my service. I haven't been to where I said I've been in XYZ. And the funny thing about my service is, and about anybody who's served, is we're government employees. Our service records are public information. So you can just look it up. They'll redact my name, or they'll redact my social security, they'll redact my address. But everything I'm telling you, I've been there and done that. So I just wanted to speak to that about challenging the narrative of, you know, what veterans look like. And it's not just, you know, two men. There are women, LGBTQ, they're everybody. But you never get to see that in the veterans landscape. All you get to see is the Pat Tillmans of the world. That's all you get to see. Or the Chris Kyles of the world. That's what the veteran normally looks like. And 9 times out of 10, they're a conservative Republican.
Right.
Can you talk about how the, you know, the show with Jon Stewart came about, how that ultimately led to what I thought we both thought was just an unbelievable moment of candor, but also it really hit, like it really did. And I could tell that John was really emotional about it. He is one of the most, he's simply one of the most giving back celebrities I've ever seen. The work he's done for firefighters post 9/11 is just, again, there's nothing, there's not enough superlatives you could say in terms of the good work that he's done. And the fact that he has led off his return to, you know, primetime with a show about the war and what it's like, the war experience, and having somebody like yourself speak about it, you know, we'd love to hear about how it came about and, you know, just what the experience has been like over the past week.
Well, it came about because of the work that I do for actual work. You know, I work with an organization called a 501c3 called the Black Veterans Project. It's a national veteran service organization that is, you know, trying to secure the legacy of Black veterans in America, because so, like I said, so often our story hasn't been told. And we're also doing work around benefit obstruction, which ties into the John Stewart thing. So we have the Department of Veterans Affairs has data going back to literally the Civil War of how they obstructed benefits from African-American service members. It's unbelievable. It goes back that far back. And they don't want to release that data. So we're actually trying to get that data released. And that's what our work is around, is not only, you know, fighting benefit obstruction, but also telling the story and capturing the legacy of America's Black veterans and putting that out to the public. Because like I said, for so long, it hasn't been portrayed. And in that organization, I am the senior policy advisor in the Black Veterans Project. So I do a lot of media, believe it or not. I sit right here at my kitchen table with my Crocs on, and I've been on CBS, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, you name it, I've been on it. And we, a lot of the times, people reach out to our organization because they want Black voices in those spaces. And they specifically ask for a veteran who has experience with burn pits. Lo and behold, ta-da, in the organization, it's all run by veterans. I'm the only infantryman in the organization. So I have a lot of experience with burn pits, burning human fecal matter and all those things that you wouldn't believe. So they invited me on this. Well, actually, I had to do an interview, believe it or not. So they wanted to hear my story. I told my story. They said, okay, you seem like you'd be a guest on the show. And I told them one stipulation, one caveat. I said, I want to tell you this now before you invite me on this show. I love John Stewart and the work he's done. I don't want to make anybody look bad. I don't hold back when I speak about a topic. I speak the truth. And the producer was like, listen, man, we want you to be as real as this situation demands for. I said, okay. So we're sitting up there. I'm over here challenging Admiral Mike Mullen because I'm like, you're foolish, sir. You don't know what you're talking about. And that's what you saw on the thing. And John Stewart, actually, anecdotal story, he pulled me aside after we did the first taping. Because if you notice, I'm in all three segments. He pulled me aside after the first taping and was like, can you stay for the whole thing? I was like, sure. And he's like, I've never heard somebody speak of it like that. He's like, I expect big things from you in the future. I'm going to be watching you. And I was like, okay, whatever. But when I went on the show, I was so passionate and animated because this is a topic that most Americans have no idea about. They don't even understand what a burn pit is. And the fact that all of these young men and women are coming back 27, 28, 30, 35, and are getting sick and dying of these rare-ass cancers that you only see when you're exposed to these toxic chemicals. We've all had different jobs in the military. We all come from different walks of life. But what is the one constant that is in all of our stories? We're all exposed to these toxic chemicals. And the fact that the VA is presuming that we're not sick and having us prove that we're sick, as opposed to assuming that we're sick and then auditing our claims afterward, is the reason why so many people are dying of these diseases right now. I'm still doing the work. The 21st of October, I'll be in D.C. at two press conferences on Capitol Hill. And then I have meetings with, you know, some high up folks in Capitol Hill that weekend, 22nd or 23rd, I believe. So this is what I do all that while trying to run for Congress. So my organizing work has not stopped. Just when I lost the first time, As a matter of fact, those efforts redoubled.
That's amazing. We always talk about, I just had this sort of epiphany about when you were talking about how the different things that you were exposed to and the different kinds of cancers that you see people getting that are only from these chemicals and conditions. It reminds me of the firefighters, that we're having something in Florida where our firefighters are having to fight to get health benefits that cover all types of cancers, but their health benefits only cover specific types of cancers and not the cancers they're exposed to. And it's really just pathetic how we treat people that serve us, like in whatever way. I mean, it's pathetic.
America, that's how she's always been. America does not give a damn about you unless you can offer her something. Once you can offer her something, no more, she doesn't care. The natives had land. We wanted it. We took it. After that, we put them on reservations and took everything from them and watched them wither and die. They don't care. Black people had something they wanted. They wanted labor. We brought them over here, put them on plantations and watched them die for 400 years. They didn't care. The country wanted a railroad built. They used Asian Americans to build the railroad. And as soon as the war hit, they threw them in concentration camps. They didn't care. That's how America does the same thing with veterans. They want your mind. They want your body. They want your labor. They want you to fight. Once you can't, what does America want? What does the military want with me now? I'm a 35-year-old man who's 90% disabled. I can do nothing for them. Why would they want a relationship with me? They don't give a damn about me. They've used me up. They've gotten what they wanted out of me, and now they throw me away. That's how it's always been with America. America is what Donald Trump was. She's transactional. When people saw it, like, oh, he's just how he just wants. That's the same way America is.
In some ways, don't you think he was really like, I found him to be like the perfect representation of what our values have become here. Like, so it's funny that you say that, because that to me is how I see, I would portray us as that. Like anywhere in the world, I would think that's how we're portrayed. Like that's a perfect example of us.
Listen, Americans don't understand how the rest of the world sees us. I've traveled all around the world. I've been to 27 different countries. I was stationed in Europe, and Europe is like the America of the Middle East, meaning that everything's together. Like
right.
Germany is here. You can just hop on a train and be in Hungary, or you can go to, you know, Prague in the Czech Republic, or you can, you know, go to France or Spain. It's not that hard to get around Europe. It's very compact. They don't look at Americans like we think we are in the rest of the world's eyes. They see us as arrogant, you know, ignorant, prideful, sinful, all these things, the bullies of the world. And Donald Trump personified that. Look, think about it. You have a 70-year-old billionaire who has all the money in the world, because $1 billion can last you 10 lifetimes. Isn't happy with that. Wants to come and run the country. Cool. You won the first time. Then is not happy with that. Not even be a president. Wants to be a damn dictator. Wants to break all the rules. Wants to do whatever he wants. That's what America is. And then, when we lose, or when we lost Vietnam, we didn't lose Vietnam. Yeah, we did. Afghanistan fell. It was a strategic win. No, it wasn't. Donald Trump lost. No, he didn't. America doesn't want to admit defeat when she loses. It is Donald Trump is a microcosm of what America is seen as around the world. And it was fitting that he was running the country, because that's exactly how the rest of the world sees us.
Yeah, I find it interesting also that you say we've lost, because I think that too. We've lost, and there's nobody wants to acknowledge that. And of course, we were in these places illegally occupying them anyway, so it's not like these were legitimate wars in the first place. But when you look at this last, I mean, we were supportive of Biden getting out of Afghanistan. The truth is, obviously, we've been against it the entire time. We never should have been there. We did a panel on that with some veterans talking about, you know, that this was going to look bad no matter which president pulled out. This was going to go this way no matter who did it. Like there was no winning. There was no good exit. Right. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that. And also that response that we now know, I think, killed a family of 10 people.
So when people talk about a troop withdrawal, first of all, those two words have never been in 99.9% of America's lexicon. troop withdrawal. They've never heard that until this past summer. And I always ask people, always tell people, if you have never been to combat, your opinion on a troop withdrawal is null and void.
Thank you.
If you've never been to combat, if you've been deployed and you still want troops to be over there, then you've never actually been to combat.
Again. Oh no, if you don't want troops pulled out, put on a freaking uniform, get the hell over there and fight on the front lines like the others are doing.
That's what I'm saying. So even if you have been deployed, because I see a lot of Republicans who have served, like we should have left the troops over there. I always ask the question, have you been to combat? There's a difference between just going to Afghanistan and being stationed behind big ass walls and going to combat. If you have never been to combat, I don't want to hear a goddamn thing you have to say. If you have been to combat, we can have that conversation. But if you've never had to make a decision like I have, whether to shoot a 9-year-old child that was running at you, then I don't want to hear your voice. If you've never had to decide whether to put a hood over somebody's head who was terrified and pissing and throw them on a Black Hawk helicopter, you knowing that they will never see their family again, I don't want to hear your voice. If you've never seen your friend, a grown man, like our platoon sergeant used to call us, a barrel-chested freedom fighter, with his neck open like a goddamn sardine can and blood spurting out and his eye sockets mushed because of the concussive overpressure of an IED blast and looked like socks full of sand. If you've never seen somebody exsanguinate in front of you while he was screaming for his mother and you knew he was dying because he wasn't making any sense, I don't want to hear your goddamn opinion on a troop pullout. So just shut up. Now, when we talk about a troop pullout, yes, we should have left 20 years ago. We had a specific mission to go after Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Once we crippled that terrorist organization, I use the word terrorist in quotes because that word is a loaded word. But once we did that, and once we got Osama bin Laden, I was in Afghanistan in April of 2011 when we killed Osama bin Laden. I was 60 miles away from the Pakistani border in Maywand, Afghanistan, sitting in my goddamn tent when everything went black because we were having, when you do an operation like that, they black out all communications so nothing leaks. And I knew before Americans had any idea that we killed Osama bin Laden because we got the word. We're like, we just got him. And I turned to my lieutenant and I was like, what the hell are we still doing here, sir? That was in 2011. We didn't leave to 2021, so another 10 years after. So we should have been gone because we spent $6 trillion in treasure and we untold amounts of death and destruction on both sides. And I don't like when people leave out the untold stories of Afghan civilians and Iraqi civilians, you know, and how we destroyed their land and killed. We killed millions of them. And I'll say that. I know for a fact a million Iraqis died in that conflict. I know that for a fact. I've seen the bodies. And we don't ever talk about that. So, again, if you don't know these things firsthand, I would never tell Jen what it's like to birth a baby. I have no goddamn clue. I'm not a subject matter expert. I can't tell you that. Just like an idiot telling a virologist that this virus is fake, or somebody telling an immunologist that these vaccines don't work, or somebody telling an infectious disease expert this thing is just like the flu. Shut your ass up because you do not know. And you know what I mean? It's better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And people do that every day on subjects they have absolutely no idea talking about. You can have an opinion, but when you have a vociferous opinion and you're stating a declarative statement, we should have done X, Y, Z. Right. If you've never walked a mile in those shoes, I don't want to hear it.
Great use of President Lincoln right there. I definitely think that the other thing that I took away from, you know, being on the panel on Jon Stewart's show was the fact that you were very candid about the fact that you've killed people. And there are people who don't want to hear this. They don't know how to take it because war only looks glamorous from miles and miles away. Like when when Brian Williams was, talking about the big, beautiful bombs in the air. Oh, yeah. But we don't talk about what happened when those bombs hit the ground and how the burden that comes with that, just one bomb, you know, there is something to be said for what you're doing right now. And the fact that your platform's getting bigger and you're speaking even louder, more and more people need to hear this. They need to hear what war is really like, because war is hell, and it's hell that'll never leave you. If you've ever experienced it, and I haven't, but I have some close friends that have, and I have some close friends that have done what you've done, and they don't want to talk about it. They want it buried in the back of their head and pretend like it never happened. It's a part of their life that they would rather not acknowledge ever happened. And it's at the point now where, because of what you're doing, maybe, just maybe, it might jar something in some people's head and say, you know what, war is bullshit and we don't need to be there anymore. We're only there for rich aristocrats to get richer because of natural resources that we think we're entitled to. If it's anything other than that, please tell me, because I don't see any other example of it other than that.
I think they're playing Stratego. They're playing Stratego, and it's basically a whole bunch of oligarchs. And to me, it doesn't matter whether my oligarchs are Saudi Arabian or Russian or Chinese or American. It doesn't matter. It's them and it's not us. The people, and that's what I've always thought about. Like, even growing up, my parents are hippies and I was raised very peace oriented. But like, I've always, and especially since being a mom, I always think about like these women in places like Yemen and Afghanistan and Syria. And I'm picturing mothers, and all they're trying to do is keep their kids alive and get them from point A to point B in one piece. That's it. They're just mothers. They're just people like me. And we have this such a tendency in this country to other everybody. Like, if you live outside the borders of this country, you're somehow lesser. It's horrible. And then we also don't cover it in the media. That's the thing. We're not showing this. It's very frustrating.
So I was real on my experiences of what, I mean, when I was younger, when I was 22, 23, 24, you know, that was those ages. I was just like that, burying it, not talking about it. You would never even know I've served in the military because I would never speak about it because it's very horrible, you know. And I told you some of the things that I've done and seen, or some of the things I've had to do, I would be labeled there would be crimes against humanity if I didn't have an American flag on my shoulder. So that's why I was telling Admiral Mullen, because you didn't see the full clip. It was obviously cut and edited. Before I said what I said, he was saying that we need to prepare for the next war. He couldn't even name the war. He didn't say the next war with who. He said we need to prepare for the next war. And that's what triggered something in my mind. I was like, look at this guy already thinking about what next war we're going to fight. And we barely just got out of this one like 2 weeks ago. And they're already preparing for the next war. And Admiral Mike Mullen, I don't know what he did in the Navy, but I know he was in the Navy and he's never had to actually fight. So that's why I said what I said, and I said it how I said it. I don't know if you've ever been put in a position to where you had to take human life. And it's not something that I brag about, but it's something that it's that deadly serious and real that in that decision, it's either that person or you. That person has hopes and dreams and aspirations and a family and goals just like you have. They may not be the same as yours, but I promise you they have them and you have them. So now in that moment in time in human existence, it's either you or that person. That is how it works. And it's that granular of a situation. No matter if that person is 9 years old or if that person is 90 years old, that's what the decision has to be. And the ramifications that come after that are the ones you have to live with that eat you up. And that's why we have so many veterans committing suicide every day. But that's how real war is. And people don't understand, because you see it on TV, you see it in movies, it's glorified and glamorized as if it's some, you know, wild Western, you know, every man should go through this in their life. And this is what makes you it's the worst of human behavior. That's why it kind of gets to me when I see war tossed around casually in conversations, you know, talking about football players. We go to war every Sunday, or, you know, I go to war with you. I'm like, don't say that. That's, to me, it means a completely different thing. War is not this casual thing. Oh, I'm at war, you know, trying to make this decision. No, it's not that lighthearted to where it's a very, very serious thing. I can't impress upon people enough how hellacious combat truly is. It's the worst of human behavior. I never want to see another war ever again as long as I live. Diplomacy needs to be on the table at all times, because war is just that bad.
When you say what you say, it not only makes me very upset and very emotional, it reminds me of how much I hate my congressional representative, how much I absolutely...
Everything reminds you of how much you hate her.
No, but this is the issue. This more than any other issue is why. Because she's a bloodthirsty neocon. She's a
war hawk. She's a total war hawk.
She is, somebody who is heavily funded, particularly by Raytheon, Honeywell, and General Dynamics, and has been for a very long time. She was desperately trying to get President Trump to invade Venezuela. Did one of those, as you know, publicity stunts where she clearly was under armored guard, but went to the line, the border line between Colombia and Venezuela, and was with Representative, the one from 27, who I'm forgetting her name.
The one who beat Donna Shalala?
Yeah, Donna Shalala. So the two of them were there and, you know, acting like, oh, we have to liberate these people. I'm like, the people that always call for war are comfortable white suburbanites. They're the ones who always are willing to say, let's go to war, let's do this, because this is what our country needs. And again, your story just completely crystallizes how much that lady should not be representing our country.
Anybody who takes money from the military-industrial complex should not be representing.
And that is true on the one hand, but then it goes to a completely different stratosphere when that person is literally advocating for war, for it.
Yeah.
Saying that we have to go there, we have to go into Cuba.
Oh yeah, no, she was suggesting that we bomb Cuba.
That's why I'm such a unicorn, because again, there are veterans who are on the left. There are some, you know, Tammy Duckworth is the left, according to the right. You know, there are some veterans who are on the Democratic side. Tim Lu is a veteran. He's an Air Force veteran. There's a few more veterans who are, Pete Buttigieg is a veteran. You know what I mean? But these guys, I'm not denigrating their service. Everybody in service plays a role. Tim Lu never seen from behind a desk. Pete Buttigieg went on like two supply convoys. They didn't fight. I'm telling you right now, I'm such a unicorn because I'm not only a leftist, I'm a democratic socialist, but I was a goddamn grunt. I was an infantryman. I did three tours. Most people do one tour and that's it. If you do two tours, you're Billy Badass. I did three and it was going on a fourth before I got out of the military. I had 9 months left on my contract and they were trying to send me on a fourth tour. If I had 11 months or more, I would have went on a fourth tour. Because I had 9 months, I was in what they call a terminal window. So I'm getting out. I can't go on a fourth tour. When I got to my new unit, I came down on orders in May of 2012 to go back to Afghanistan after I just got back from Afghanistan. So I was getting ready to go on my fourth. And most people don't do that at all. You just go on one and that's it. So I've been to both fields of battle. I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan, which is also a unique thing. So I've been to both. So I've seen it from both. And not only that, I did it as a private, you know, a brand new E1 in the Army. And I did it as a squad leader, a leader of soldiers in combat. So I was that guy at 18, not knowing what the hell was going on. And then by the time I was 25, I was that guy with the five other 18-year-olds behind me. They having to listen to me. So I encompassed the whole, you know, sphere of experiences in war and combat. And there's nobody on our side who can tell this story, because maybe they don't want to tell it, but I haven't found anybody on our side who has this particular story to where if anybody tries any type of pushback, any type of BS, I can easily quell it and knock it down, because I'm like, listen, I've been there, I've done that, I got the goddamn t-shirt to prove it.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you this. I mean, we had talked about the last time you were on about how for where you grew up, that the military is basically the jobs program. That's what there was. Like, that's what was available. That's how you got out. But at what point when you were serving, did you have like your realization that this is bullshit?
February 9th, 2013.
How long had you been in?
I was in at that point, not 2013, excuse me, February 9th, 2009. I was in that point five, almost 4 years. I was on my second tour, almost 4 years. The night before, so we had just touched down in Iraq. We had just got all of our equipment and stuff. This is my second tour. And the night before you go out on a mission, you do a briefing. You know, and we were doing something called a left seat, right seat ride, meaning the unit that we were replacing, two of their trucks would go out and show us the AO, the area of operations, and two of our trucks would go out so we can get familiar with the area of operations. So the night before, I was joking with my lieutenant, Lieutenant Bro, and I was like, sir, watch me get blown up on our first patrol tomorrow. And I'll never forget, he looked at me, he's like, this is his first deployment. He's my lieutenant. He's in charge of me. This is his first deployment ever. I'm 22 at the time, and I'm already a seasoned veteran because I already got 15 months under my belt from Iraq the first time. And Lieutenant Bro was like, James, shut the hell up. Don't say that. I was like, sir, you really think I can control whether we die or not? I was like, if I could control that, I wouldn't even be here right now. Long story short, we go out on patrol. We just leave the gate. We left Kirkuk Regional Air Base. I'll never forget the route. It's stuck in my head. We went out the gate. We made a right on Route Cheyenne. We went about a quarter of a mile, and we made a left on what we call Route Ford because it had a lot of Iraqi car dealerships and people and markets and all that stuff. So all of our routes were named, so we called it Route Ford. I was the fourth truck in the convoy, and I'm doing all the things I remember from my first deployment in Iraq, in Baghdad. My second deployment was in northern Iraq, in Kirkuk, what I'm telling you about. So the enemy used completely different tactics. So I'm doing all the stuff that I did on my first deployment. I'm behind the machine gun. I'm behind my 50 cal, 106-inch 50 caliber bullets. Armor-piercing incendiary, meaning they pierce up to 2 inches of armor and then they catch stuff on fire inside the armor once they pierce them. And I'm looking left and right. I'm scanning my head. And out of the corner of my eye, I see two young males standing in an alleyway. And the movement is what caught my eye. He was throwing a grenade. Yeah. He had a grenade like this. And our turrets were electronic. So the turret moved slower than my head. I saw his arm cock. And I turned my head to the left. And just like in the movies, there was a huge grenade coming at me in slow motion. And I'll never forget, I said, shit, he got me. I was like, there's nothing I can do. It's coming at me. I can see it coming. There's nothing I can do. It hit on the top of my truck. By the grace of God, it bounced up. It bounced to the side of my truck. And as soon as it bounced to the side, boom, it exploded. And that's what blew out my eardrum. And that's when I knew I almost just died 5 minutes into this patrol, and I got another 364 more days of this. What the hell am I? And I already did this. Why am I here? Who sent me back here? And what the hell am I doing in this country? That's when I'm like, this is bullshit. I'm done with this.
And that, unfortunately, and again, I did not serve, but only from the people that I've spoken to, your peripheral vision takes on a whole new meaning when you're serving in combat. Yes. Because you have to see everything. You have to feel everything. And it's almost like you have to have eyes in the back of your head, because a lot of what ultimately happens on the battlefront is you are essentially sensing nature. Like, you are hearing things that you would never hear if you were in regular society, but in warfare, you know when that pin drops. You can hear it from 100 yards away, but you know it, and you're like, oh, we're getting attacked right now. And you only have literally seconds to react, if you have seconds to react. And as you said, it just so happened that and this was probably an inexperienced kid, but somebody who may have been part of Al-Qaeda, he didn't count it correctly. He probably missed the count by 2 or 3 seconds, and he launched it. And it just so happens, because he missed the count, that it didn't explode as soon as it hit the truck. He thought he timed it right, but as it turns out, he didn't. And that's why you're alive. Again, I didn't serve.
If I told you how many times I almost died, you'd think I was bullshitting you. You'd think I was making it up. I have story after story of hiding behind dirt mounds and bullets are hitting right here. And I'm like, okay, it's over. I'm going to bite one of these. I got stories of IEDs going off shooting what we call an explosively formed penetrator, which is a giant slug of metal that they form that shoots out like an RPG, literally passing and taking off the front of my truck and missing my legs by inches. I have so many stories of almost dying. You would not believe it. That was
that
the first
time. That shouldn't be a thing. That shouldn't be a thing.
That was like, the first time.
That's crazy. Although this makes me want to talk about that story that's in the in our news
so
section.
Since you have graced us with your presence, you know, this I think is always, you know, such a very important topic. Of course, we talked about what happened. We always do news and amuse midweek. But what we are going to do is include you because I think that these topics are extremely relevant, the ones that we have selected for this evening. So here we are with a number of topics that are very important. Of course, we did talk about, you know, the fact that there was the errant drone strike that killed 10 members of their family and they're still awaiting compensation. Guess what?
You're
never getting it.
But this is something that I don't think that we talk about enough because, you know, when we talk about, yeah, troops coming home from Afghanistan, and yes, that's a great thing. That should have happened. But we're not addressing the drone strikes that we're continuously doing that apparently had a 90% civilian casualty rate. And the only person that's gotten in trouble for that is Daniel Hale, who exposed it and is now getting 45 months in prison. I think the drone strikes are not... We don't see what that looks like, and so it's easy for us to ignore it. And I think this is a huge problem.
But so, again, we could talk about the drone strikes. We could talk about the pollution that the military leaves behind. We could talk about how the largest polluter in the world or in the United States of America is the American military. We could talk about all the money it's pulling away from all the social safety programs we need in America. We can talk about all of it. And I told you that all encompasses. What I tell you at the beginning of this conversation, the military industrial complex is the unforeseen hand that moves this entire country. And in turn, moving the country, we move the global economy. That's what maintains our hegemony, is the military industrial complex. That is the damn Leviathan that we have to tackle. All of this stuff. And nobody speaks about it because look at the Dixie Chicks. They said something about it. Their careers were ended. Nobody wants to be the person to step out. Even Bernie Sanders, who's fearless, you hear one or two things about the military industrial complex from Bernie. He says it here. He says it there. He doesn't beat it like I beat it. AOC says here. She says it there. She doesn't go after it like I go after it. And it's not the discredit to them. It's because they don't understand how to approach the situation and they don't want to be labeled as, you know, not supporting the troops. Because even to this day, it's right. Still a death knell for your political career if you're, you know, anti-American troop. But it's a lot different when it's one of the American troops standing up and telling you that this is all BS.
That is the, and again, as you said, you are the unicorn. You are a black man in America who is saying that this is all bullshit. It works both ways. There's not one party who's, you know, one party may be more rah-rah about it than the other one, but they're all part of the same team.
You can check the FEC filings and see they take the same money.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole point. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, our representative who takes the most amount of money from, you know, the Cuban regime change pack or whatever you want to call them.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the lines are not divided anymore. I mean, they never really were, but now, I mean, they're just completely blurred, especially when it comes to the MIC. And a lot of, but there's also this uprising of sorts of a lot of people who are really getting tired of, you know, the way that we just pillage the rest of the world. And I think it was very symbolic that when we had Indigenous, said it right, People's Day the other day, because that is the day that should be celebrated.
Celebrated a day early.
Yes, but okay. there is no reason to celebrate Columbus Day. It more or less just symbolizes everything that we are, that we shouldn't be. You want to have Italian Heritage Day.
See,
that's
that
what
I
you
understand.
Should have.
That I
and
understand.
That could easily be a holiday, especially in New York, as you know. You know, Columbus Day is rigorously celebrated in New York, but a lot of it just has to do
Italian Heritage.
It is an Italian Heritage Day, and that's what it should be. But when it comes to, you know, as we, you know, said the other day, doing Indigenous Peoples Day, the fact that they were able to vandalize you know, President Jackson's statue across from the White House says that a lot of the people are not talking about it, but I really think we're reaching a breaking point with a lot of people in this country. How do you feel about that?
Yes and no. I mean, our country is so big. People don't understand that we're the third most populous nation on the planet. There's China, there's India, there's the United States of America. You know, we don't think about it like that, but you see countries in Africa, you're like, they got to have more. No, there's a lot of people in this country, 330 plus million people in this country. And sadly, we know that there's more. So there are about 60 million kids in this country. So we can take them out of the equation. Boom. So out of that, that's 270 million people left. Yeah. We know half of those people are Trump supporters. They almost half. They voted for. We know there's 70, 80 million people in this country who do not, we don't share a common reality. You know what I mean? That we have common humanity, but they don't even understand that because they look at gays as less. They look at as immigrants as less. They look at Black people as less. So we don't share a common reality. I can't even get you to understand my common humanity. So where's the turning point? The turning point seems to be like the people talking in the echo chamber of pain, but we already know the problem. We already know what's wrong. We need to get the other half to understand the plight that we're talking about. If not, then we're just sitting in our hermetically sealed echo chamber of pain. Yeah, I mean, Black people know we've gotten a raw deal. LGBT people know they got a raw deal. Immigrants know they got a raw deal. Women know they got a raw deal. Disabled know they got a raw deal. We need to get the other half to understand what we're talking about, or we're just spitting into the wind for mixing metaphors. So yeah. I think there's not a change. I think there's been an awakening, a huge awakening, and especially in the younger generation, because guess what? For the first time in human history, we had the most technologically advanced generation sit down for an entire year with nothing to do but watch how the political process unfolds. We had that for an entire year. So all the questions that they may have had in passing that they didn't have time to figure out because they were doing something else, they had nothing but time to figure out. And there's been an entire generation of people who have been awakened to the BS that's going on in America. And now if we can get those people mobilized, then that change that we're talking about or hopefully seeing can come to fruition.
That is a,
I hope so. Yeah. I am of the thought that I'm not really big on the idea of monuments. I also don't think we should have humans on currency, just like I don't think humans should be mascots. I think it's this sort of like false sense of idol worship in any direction. Like I think we could use like animals and parts of nature on our currency. But these statues, we know, were not put up in a historical context. They were put up generally during the civil rights era and prior as means of intimidation. And a lot of them are actually really cheap and hollow on the inside. And they were really just put up to be threatening. And they weren't done out of. And so it's interesting to me that people claim this sort of like we're tearing down history. And I'm thinking, all right, we'll stick it in a museum somewhere and move along.
And but the irony of that is you put up a statue of a guy from the Civil War during the civil rights area. In the civil rights era to intimidate people that couldn't even come to the damn area where the statue was at. I don't care if I wasn't allowed on that part of town. I'm never going to see General Custer sitting up there. I don't know. I'm not going to see Robert E. Lee. I don't know. I'm not allowed on that part of town. What the hell? You know what I mean? So that's the irony of it. Like, we're going to intimidate those Black folks. You don't have to over here to see the statues that's supposed to intimidate us. What the hell?
Well, we do have one creative idea here in Florida. We don't have many of them, but apparently there is a petition to change the name Lee County to Bruce Lee County here in Florida. I think that's pretty cool.
Florida still has Dixie Highway. Florida still has, they have Winn-Dixie. They have, Florida has its own checkered past with,
got some issues.
We've got a checkered present.
We have a checkered present. Exactly. We have some
We got a lot going on down here.
I don't know. There's some people in New York when we see, like, every time we see a headline says Florida, we're like, okay.
It's got to be Florida.
I don't know what the hell y'all be doing down there. it's Florida.
It's something in the water, and it's being out in the sun way too much. I think it's
going to throw an alligator into McDonald's.
We have some issues.
So obviously, we're obviously very grateful for AOC and the rest of the non-corporate members of, you know, the Democratic Party right now who are holding the line when it comes to this reconciliation bill, which I think would obviously be a huge game changer, particularly when it comes to Medicare expansion. Bernie's proposals are an absolute good. It's not everything we want, but it's certainly moving things in the right direction. Of course, there's also the environmental policies that are there as well that we're trying to hold the line on. But AOC, Ilhan Omar, and I think a dozen other Democrats came out and said, we have to do something about canceling student debt. I mean, this is one of the biggest reasons why, as you talked about, you know, going into the military seems to be one of the only ways out for people who are under immense financial burden. And so this would be a great way to not just stimulate the economy, but it would also give a hell of a lot of credence to the idea that, all right, maybe the Democrats aren't going to get destroyed in the midterms. You know, everyone's like, Biden's hands are tied. There's nothing that he can do. But he can absolutely cancel student debt. He can absolutely expand Medicare with the stroke of a pen.
It can happen.
He could absolutely decriminalize cannabis across the board.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that he could do through executive action.
Oh, yes.
But he hasn't done anything.
That's not true. And I'm going to give props where props are due. And he did something recently with the national monuments and protecting, putting protections back in place.
Okay.
That were very, very good for our indigenous brothers and sisters. That's what I would say. So give props where props are due. But I would also like to point out that Ilhan Omar wearing a white hijab looks like there's a halo around her head to me.
Well, let me couple things about that situation. One, joining the military I have student loans. Trust me. Mm. They only pay for your bachelor's degree. Anything after that, I have student loans for my master's degree. And when I'm going to have students, well, hopefully I get a stipend and all that stuff when I go for my PhD, but I have tens of thousands of dollars worth of student loans for a master's degree. So it doesn't guarantee you all your education that you need. That's number one. Number two, Biden has done some things good, right? But remember we talked about at the beginning, there are real lives being affected right now. There are things he could do right now that would change the lives of millions of people. Like you said, and I tweeted about this the day he was elected. I said, guess what? The House passed a bill legalizing marijuana, right? Why wasn't marijuana legal in the first 100 days?
Yeah. And that's the no-brainer. That's the easy one in terms of it's low-hanging fruit.
So imagine how many people have gone to jail between when he was elected and right now for marijuana. How many lives have been destroyed between when he was elected, not elected, but when he was sworn in and right now for marijuana? Tens of thousands of people now have a felony on their record. Tens of thousands of people can't even get those high-ass student loans. They can't apply for a job. They can't get housing. They can't get a loan to start a small business. They can't do any of that stuff because something as simple as legalizing marijuana, which your own Congress already voted for, could have been done on day one with the stroke of a pen. It should have been done on day one when Barack Obama was in office. It should have been done when Clinton was in office. It should have never been criminalized in the first place. But how many people's lives would be changed if he had just done that on day one. So yeah, there's something my drill sergeant used to always tell me, all right? A race is 100 attaboys.
That's right.
So you can do all that. You can do these little things here, there. But until you do something that, you know, is actually going to move people's lives forward, Biden has done a lot of things. I've seen a lot of things he's done, but none of them are transformational. None of them.
That's right. Bingo.
No, that's true. Yes. That's true. Absolutely.
And if it's not transformational, then that more than anything else is, yeah. And it's a great point, Isaiah, because it's the final story of our news and amuse for the week, which is, of course, you know, Gavin Newsom was able to skate, if you will, to not getting recalled because you had a candidate on the GOP side who took the...
It just took it to a
whole other level of insanity.
I hate to do this, but I have to run because I have...
No, go. We've taken up enough of your time. All right, put it... Where can people... What's the website so we can put it up?
Yeah, the website is Isaiah for Congress, but it's all the same handles, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. They can find me.
Thank you so much for hanging out. I was just saying, I could talk to Isaiah for hours, but go. I know you're busy. Thank you so much.
I'm so tired because I still have another meeting interview thing to do.
All right, go.
Well, this was somebody on the West Coast. I'm like, bro, it's 9:30, but in there it's going on 6:30. So
I know the West Coasters are a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
I tell that to Mike Figueredo all the time. West
Coasters. I just did his show 2 days ago.
Yeah,
he's great. So, we can't thank you enough for everything that you do.
We'll get you back in the new year.
Can we please commit to going to New York to help them at some point?
We will definitely come help.
We will be there, my friend.
Jen, we always DM each other. You know, fastest way to reach me, Jen, is just Twitter DM and I'll respond.
Thank you so much
for what y'all do. And it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks.
Same to you, my friend. Have a great evening. Bye.
You got to put his website up.
Yes. Well, apparently we had an issue with a connection. And you know what?
Not on our end. It is, and our end's been fine, and we're in the incognito zone.
Yeah, no, it's just saying it over there for some reason. We'll try it again.
That's weird.
Yeah, we're having trouble connecting. Please, you know what? If it ain't that, it's something else. So anyway, IsaiahForCongress.com.
Guys, Isaiah's the real deal.
He is the real deal.
He's the real deal.
And like I said, you know, when we went to Brand New Congress and we went to the summit, there are always... As the great Randy Macho Man Savage used to say, the cream rises to the top. And the cream absolutely rises to the top.
And we knew it was him, Jamal. Well, we didn't really meet Jamal, but we saw him briefly. And Corey. We knew it was Corey.
I would say of all the people that were there, I would say Isaiah and Corey stood out
for sure.
As much as anybody that was there. And that was what it was all about. And so the final story.
But can we wait?
Yeah, it was good.
But see, okay, the fact
yes,
is.
Yes, I just realized.
Okay, so this is for people who are audio, we have the two articles, and there's an Ilhan Omar picture.
We have another Lulu sighting.
Okay, so Ilhan Omar is saying, we must help students. And then Gavin Newsom is saying, screw the students. But the thing is that, and I'd like to point out, Gavin Newsom, also not a Jew, right? Not a Jew? Okay, and I put the horns on him. See, not anti-Semitic, devil horns, because. And then I do think...
What are you doing to a good Irish Catholic?
And I don't care. And I do think that Ilhan's white hijab does sort of look like a halo. I think it's kind of funny. But anyway, go ahead. You want to talk about what Gavin Newsom is not...
So when anybody talks about the governor who is going to run for president, it's just a question of whether it's 24 or 28. So get ready because it's coming. Something as simple as the Cal Grant, which is California's version of the Pell Grant. This is to help the most financially strapped people in society get an education. And he is vetoing this bill, which would have helped 150,000 Californians.
But to what end, other than we know? We know it obviously has something to do with whoever his financial... This is the same man who was basically like the booty judge in the wine cave. Wasn't it like that kind of thing? Like with his big donor dinner. And so he's got probably huge donors that are the financial industry that do not want student loan forgiveness because that's their gravy train.
Just like he's taking money out the yin-yang from big oil. They're still drilling off the coast of California. And you would think what just happened... would have stopped it.
Yeah.
You would think something so cataclysmic as what just happened in Southern California with that drilling accident, that would be it. There's already enough of an environmental burden in California that somebody would have stepped up and said, that's it. But again, it doesn't matter what your party is.
But I will say this, the fact that he is basically a corporate whore who does basically the bidding of the same corporations that Republicans do, that will not be enough to differentiate him in any way, shape, or form from whoever the Republican is who is running. And they will run into the same problem, whether it's him, whether it's, I don't even know who else they think is going to come up and run. I don't know who they're thinking
of. In California?
No, I'm talking about
for president.
Oh,
Buttigieg.
But okay. So, also,
now, of course, if you're asking now, if you're asking who do I think would have a better chance in terms of being able to sell the empire? Oh, it's Gavin Newsom. It's not even a question.
Well, Buttigieg,
not even a question.
Yeah,
no, Gavin Newsom is a. He's a JFK.
Not just that. You're talking about the difference of somebody who's run the state of California, which was like the fourth largest economy in the world, versus somebody.
Well, of course, I ran the great state of California for 8 years.
Whereas,
and I became president and I didn't have much in the brain.
Somebody like Buttigieg was the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and did a horrible job. And his legacy there is horrible.
And the history of being the governor of California has always been a huge springboard. Remember, it produced President Nixon. It produced President Reagan. It almost produced President Brown. He was second to Clinton in 92. So,
and yet I don't see this happening.
No, I don't. Again, I think our country is changing too much.
Where people are, makes him different, like, than saying he's like Obama?
Well, that's what I was saying. You took the words out of my mouth.
Obama.
Well, if he had run for president back in 2008, after around the time that he became the mayor of San Francisco, because I've seen Newsom coming for a long time.
He's very neo-lib and very part of the establishment and just very elitist.
But you can tell that he's somebody who, to the normie Dems and to the people who don't pay attention, he's going to be tough to beat because people buy into his BS.
Well, yes, yeah.
And he's also over-woke, so he plays into that garbage as well.
That's like a requirement for California, though.
It's not, but again... And the reason why I come down hard on some of these social issues is because as much as the social issues matter, they pale in comparison to economic issues and to the things that he has done as governor and the fact that he just spit in the face
of students,
of so many students.
Get that. Okay. It's such a...
And again, why is it? Why would it be? Because the banks own the debt. And they don't want to have any of it taken away. Why? Because they're making money hand over fist in interest payments. This is a racket. And it's a well-paying racket. And that's why they don't want it to go anywhere. It's no different than why President Biden is not looking to do much of anything when it comes to student loan debt cancellation. No.
Same dip, same payroll. So I just had this really good idea, completely
You're full
unrelated.
Of great ideas.
I am
here and
full
there.
Of great ideas. So guys, we will be moving our studio. And this is going to be happening sometime in the beginning of November. We're going to be transitioning over to a new place. And we were talking about what we would do because we have this whole new big wall that's going to be behind us, like an actual wall that could be done however we want. And I like the idea of having somebody paint something on it and have a mural. I almost feel like I'd love to have a contest and see whoever would want it and have their name up there and just have it be like, you know, their art. And I'd love for some ideas as to what kind of mural we would do on our wall. We should have a contest. Should have a submit ideas.
We can have a lot of great ideas. So we can have.
So we basically have a big blank wall that we could do whatever we want behind us.
It is pretty clear to me that we did make the right decision. Wednesday has already getting us better viewership than Thursday is. And that's good. And we are obviously very grateful for Isaiah. And Sean and I have no doubt will be back. He had canceled. But you know what? I guess I rub people the right way. I guess he just really wanted to come up. Maybe he just wanted to say hi to Isaiah. You never know.
I think it was me.
It was you. Okay, fair enough. It wasn't me.
I would say that if you were going to ask him as to you, me, or Isaiah, who he would want to like maybe hang with or see, I think I would probably.
I think that Shanyan is such a handsome fellow.
He's so cute. I can't even. I do like the beard.
Well, you know, the great news is that, we obviously will go to New York in the spring. It's not just going to be Isaiah. There's going to be
a
plethora of,
bevy of activity in New York.
Melanie DiRigo will obviously go out to Long Island and lend a hand there. But we will start, looking ahead to that. But that is definitely something that we should do. We service above self, but, transforming.
I want to go to Washington.
Washington State. Transforming politics into service. And yes, there are a lot of great candidates also in Washington State, led by Rebecca Parson and Jason Call.
A lot of good candidates in Washington.
We're doing what we can. And again, it is that slow drip.
But guys, if you like what we're doing and you want to contribute and help us out, we do not take salaries. Our money goes to things like homeless care packs, toiletry kits that I pass out. We donate money to non-corporate candidates only. So far, we've donated to three candidates, correct?
Yes.
Three candidates.
India Walton.
India Walton for mayor of Buffalo.
Erica Smith.
Erica Smith for U.S. Senate from North Carolina. And Elijah Manley, who is our local favorite.
Well, for whatever reason, we're kind of screwed right now. So the way we're going to do it, because I'm not able to write anything, I'm going to have to put it in a banner, which is okay. You know, we'll do a banner.
Yeah.
No big deal.
But guys, if you like what we're doing, subscribe, share, tell people about it. If you are so inclined to be a patron, which I think it should be a banner anyway, please check out...
Can't do that either.
Why is that weird? It's so weird.
So I guess we just had a bad connection.
But it's not showing up as one. All right, guys.
Stars, yes. He is running for New York's 9th. You can rewind the live stream, but as soon as we go off the air in the next few minutes, you will be able to check it out. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you're enjoying the channel. Isaiah is... He says he's a unicorn.
So wait, he's Brooklyn.
He is Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We're Brooklyn.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in Brooklyn, so I don't know exactly which part of Brooklyn, but he's Brooklyn.
He is, he's basically, I'm like trying to think of like what, like the specific neighborhood would be, but basically if you know Flatbush, by the Barclays Center, that's his area.
Oh, okay.
So that gives you an idea.
I do know where that area is actually.
Yes. So that's the part of Brooklyn that he is seeking to represent. And you know, the great thing about it, and that's the thing where
we can't put it up there. I want people to be patrons.
This is the thing about being a great candidate that is so very important. We didn't even talk about his opponent. And that's the thing.
I have no idea who it is. And here it is. It doesn't matter because I think a lot of people are not as good as he is.
Well, again, that's the thing. Jen's opponent, if she were to run against her again, is a world-renowned sleazebag, with all due respect.
Well, she has a lot of haters.
So it's not like that would be that is an unavoidable conversation.
Yeah.
But for a lot of these entrenched incumbents that have been there for years and years and years, all too often you have a lot of candidates that end up running and they want to talk about how bad their representative is, when in reality it's about how good of a representative you would be. And there is no question that if Isaiah James was able to get to Capitol Hill, boy, oh boy, would that be a game changer.
You know how you know someone would be a really good representative? When they're already being a good representative.
Oh, yes.
He's already doing that work.
Amen.
So, you know, that's the kind of people we should be paying to do the work.
Let's donate to his campaign.
We can donate. We will donate to Isaiah's campaign. But guys, this is the Lulu sticker. If you join our Patreon...
If you liked our podcast.
Wait, it's in our description though, right? Isn't it always in the description of our show, like our Patreon links? I'm pretty sure it is. Guys, I'm tech challenged if you know me. we're having issues posting things right now. Although it's doing the scrolling, we just can't add new banners.
Yes, it's very weird. But it's then weird. Again, we've been dealing with tech issues at the Yin Yang.
Right, and I don't know what it'll be in the new place. So I'm moving is what's happening. So where we are now is in my house. And so I am relocating. I'm not going far. For anybody that's local, I'm going from Davie to Plantation. And really, it's just a matter of downsizing. I am one child in college, a husband who is constantly sick of maintenance, and I'm sick of hearing him bitch about maintenance. And so we're downsizing. But the downsize upsizes our studio because there's this extra space. But anyway, we're getting a studio.
It could be one of those in-studio type situations.
Yeah, we could be. Guests. We will be able to have guests come into a studio situation.
Yeah, just like an Alan Ellison or an Elijah
Manley. And you know what? I'm thinking about the stools that are at the bar, those really swivel ones.
Well, almost like it becomes like a relaxed environment.
Yes.
Like you can have tea.
I'm doing a Kramer Merv Griffin situation.
Scandals and Animals.
So guys, support us on Patreon, give us some love, check out the website generationalchange.com.
also, we'll have a small announcement, but a big announcement to make. It's very important. So we are in the process. It will not be attached to the Democratic Party. It's going to be labor led but we are planning a labor rally for the PRO Act, but really specifically it is a labor rally to fight against the right to work laws in the state of Florida.
Right.
And this is going to be held on one of the most labor exploited days of the year, which is, of course, Black Friday. As many of you know, it has become an absolute...
Which is November 26th.
November 26th. It is going to be at Huizenga Plaza, as of right now, in Fort Lauderdale. We are hoping, against all hope, that it turns into something big.
We have to all get behind labor, people. We 100%. Have to get behind labor. It's one the only rules. Way this is going to ever work.
And Lorenzo, if you're still here, we hope that you will be involved in the organizing process. We would love to have your assistance. We literally just conceived this the other day. We do have a very strict rule about this particular event. No elected representatives, period, will be speaking at this event.
No, they can come.
They want to attend. Absolutely. We hope that they will.
We would hope they would. But this is about labor.
Labor leaders, labor organizers, that is who is speaking. Great labor leaders in South Florida, like Alinda Joseph, who is with the SEIU, Caroline Ampudita, Fred Frost, Lorenzo.
Nucleus.
Canizares, Nucleus Shelton.
There's a lot of people.
There really are. Smith of the Firefighters Union. We've got
Richard Kinkosis.
Richard Kinkosis of the South Florida AFL-CIO. We need to build a labor movement that reflects what's going on in the rest of the country right now, where we are seeing a lot of labor unions take action.
And it's not getting covered.
No.
And that's what's so people that's on right purpose. Now, there is at right now, the labor protests that are going on around the country is like a high that it has not been in. I don't think in my lifetime. Like there are strikes happening simultaneously. Like if you guys go on and Google like current labor strikes in the country, they're all over the place. It's just obviously not getting the coverage that it should. And we need to keep putting as much fuel on those fires as we can. And we need to stand with those people as much as we can. If there is a strike going on, if there is a picket line, if there's anybody on strike in your vicinity, go walk with them. Go stand with them for some amount of time. This is so important. Like that's, and quite honestly, that's the real reason I want to go to New York is I want to go and stand with the Amazon workers.
Yeah.
I think that New York is a huge turning point potential for healthcare and Amazon and labor and all of it. So I think it's like, that could be the first domino.
I just think it's a state that really is in transition in a good way. There's a number of things about New York City that, you know, again, I don't necessarily agree with, but New York State as a whole really is on the right path.
Yes.
And that is, and look, you know what? We'll say it. Happy birthday to AOC.
Her birthday?
Yeah. And she really, you know, again, we have a lot of issues.
She changed the narrative in a certain way
and we're
appreciative. But, you know, we're on the verge of having a socialist mayor in Buffalo.
That would be everything.
And if you guys haven't seen it, we did have India Walton on. Please check out that show. It's like a week and a half. The days are blurring together.
They are the establishment. You want to talk about to the extent that they are petrified.
I loved India Walton.
This lady becoming the mayor. Oh my God. You now have Melanie DiRigo's incumbent representative that she's running against, Tom Suozzi, who is supporting the defeated former mayor
who's running as a write-in because
he's supporting him. If this guy ain't asking get his ass kicked out of Congress, I don't know who is.
My God.
Because he's asking for it. The one thing about our congressional representative, she lays low. So she isn't going to do something that stupid. At least I don't think she
No, doing. She waits until it's safe. So like she didn't come out with the whole, you know, pro Chantel Brown thing, but she was very quick to congratulate her.
Oh, she was just salivating at the prospect of doing that. And she'll do it again, especially if our good friend.
But guys, India Walton, her election is November 2nd.
The same as the primary election is here in Florida's 20th congressional.
Very important. And mail-in ballots have gone out.
Mail-in ballots have gone out.
If you're in Florida's 20th, we did have three of the candidates on. We invited all of them. And really, you need to take a look. But quite honestly, there's only two candidates that are not taking corporate money, and that's Sheila Sherfalus McCormick and Omari Hardy. Either one of those candidates would be like our approved candidate, essentially, just because they're non-corporate candidates. But there's, you know, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. But guys, if you haven't supported India Walton at all, please check that out.
This one is really, I mean, listen, I don't want to take anything away from the importance of electing a non-corporate representative here in South Florida, but we as Floridians have accepted our fate. We understand how difficult a burden it is.
That's how we talk about being a Dolphins fan.
Yeah, seriously. It's emblematic of what it's like in many ways. But New York really is on the right path, and they are moving heaven and earth to try to stop India from becoming the mayor. So we really need to put all hands on deck.
If they weren't so scared of her. And the thing is, let's also say that this is also on like sort of the precipice of them getting New York Health Act.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about things that could sort of be a perfect storm together.
This is a lady who came on our show and said, I will be pushing for the New York Health Act as the mayor of Buffalo. I mean, if that doesn't sound the alarm bells to the establishment, even in a state like New York. Yes, 100%.
She had zero Fs to give. I got to tell you, this is not a woman who is going to like be threatened. She, you know, the fact that they're still coming against her, even though she won the primary, she's very nonplussed about it.
Oh, yeah. She knows. And she knows that.
Yeah, she's great.
But what this tells me, even if by some miracle this SOB is able to get back into power.
Oh, my God.
They're crumbling. They're crumbling. They do not have anywhere to go. There is the reckoning is coming for these corporate representatives. And that's why in a crazy way, I am Stars. You are a freaking rock star. And thank you so much. That is awesome to hear. That's what we're talking about. Even though we're not up there, we have donated to the camp. We've donated.
We platformed her. Yes. But the thing is like, you know, not everybody is everywhere, but everybody contributes how they contribute. And I'm, you know, she's great.
She is a badass. And that is the type of representation that we need everywhere. And we're going to
get. Imagine having someone like her as a mayor of a major city.
Exactly. Well, it would certainly top the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, I'm just saying. But that's not a burden that we have to worry about. But nevertheless, on Sunday,
what do we have?
We have one of Jen's very favorite people in the world. And we don't say that lightly because
this is
the type of person that you would go and have a beer with. Now, of course, I'll be out in Naples, but I'll be at.
Oh, thanks for telling me. I'm
going to visit my father.
Okay, so thanks for telling me.
I'm letting you know ahead of time.
Yeah, I love you. Always
This is at least 5 minutes or 5 days ahead of time anyway. But none other than Steve Grumbine is coming back to the podcast. We will be talking MMT.
Love Steve.
We've had a couple of MMT candidates on recently. We're going to talk about that. We are going to talk about the Senate race in Pennsylvania,
I always forget he's in Western Pennsylvania.
So that's a big one. We are also going to be having Michelle Rainier, who is running for the U.S. Congress to represent Florida's, I want to say it's the 13th or 15th seat. Which seat is it? Michelle?
You didn't put it on the date.
Well, I can tell you that whatever seat Charlie Crist is giving up, that is the seat that she is running for.
Oh, so Florida. Okay, I didn't even know
what state. Florida. Well, it's Sunday, and Sunday is focused on Florida. So we are focusing on Florida, and we are going to be having that conversation. Then next Thursday, we are going to have a Yang Gang extraordinaire show. First, we'll be speaking with Yang Gang candidate Erica Rhodes, who's running for California's 30th
district. And she was scheduled actually to be on, and there was some sort of mishap. It happens.
But talk about having the perfect.
Yes, it works out really well because she is definitely.
She is the appetizer to the entree of Andrew Yang coming on our podcast to talk about Forward and the Forward Party, his book Forward and the Forward Party, which I'm reading. And then the following Sunday, we will have Kim Iverson. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. We appreciate your support as always. If you guys have any comments, please make them.
I wish we could post our Patreon channel. We're going to have to figure out why we can't do that. See, if we
love
had
a Bronx
thing up here, we could just have it painted up there behind us so that it was always up there.
Yes, well, 100%. But we appreciate you guys. It's always a pleasure. We hope you enjoyed it. Can't say enough great things about Isaiah. Shania, I'm sure we'll be back. And we thank you all for your support as always. We'll see you Sunday.
Bye, all.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.